D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick expected to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. He is still traveling west with the Nashville Predators, who are looking for their 7th win in 9 games tomorrow against the Colorado Avalanche, who they just defeated earlier this week at Bridgestone Arena. So once Willie gets settled in Denver, he will join the program. And we look forward to chatting with our friend Willie Donick. One thing I was thinking about, Derek, quickly, we just heard coming back that clip from Andrew Allegretta of the Vanderbilt win against Alabama last year. If Diego Pavia wins the Heisman Trophy tomorrow, does that replace the win against Alabama as the greatest moment in Vanderbilt history?
Yeah, I would think. Or the greatest individual moment in Vanderbilt history would be Diego Pavia winning the Heisman. It would probably... Are you just saying in Vanderbilt football history or in Vanderbilt football history?
Oh. Vanderbilt football history.
I think it would be individually. Yeah, but it's hard to say it wouldn't be as a whole. But I guess it would be for me individually because it's an individual award. But if you look at it at, in its totality, you know, he needed the team to accomplish you know, the award for which he would have won, which would have been or could be the Heisman Trophy. So, I mean, if you were to say it's the biggest moment in Vanderbilt history, I couldn't disagree with you.
Vanderbilt football history.
Football history, yeah.
Because the Commodores have won national championships.
Exactly. Absolutely. So,
In other sports.
In other sports. Baseball.
Yes.
I could think of. I just think it... What I do think is this. Him, if he does win the Heisman, it'll have a greater impact on the program. I believe that.
Yes.
I believe people will then look at, it's almost like, you know, Chad said, when you go out and you get that five-star quarterback, it's almost like validation. And then on top of that, if Diego wins the Heisman, that's even further. Like, I can go to Vandy and win the Heisman. So I think him, if he wins the Heisman, it will do more for that program than anything up until this point, I think.
So all of the Heisman finalists, all the Heisman finalists, easy for me to say, are of course, there you go, they're in New York City.
Yes.
For the Heisman Trophy presentation tomorrow evening. And a local Indianapolis, I believe, reporter interviewed Fernando Mendoza about what he would plan to do with the Heisman Trophy if he were to win it. And he said it's going to stay in Bloomington. Unbeknownst to Mendoza, the Heisman gives out one trophy to the player and another to the school. So Bloomington can have one and Mendoza can have one.
Bless his heart. I mean,
it's hard not to like Fernando Mendoza.
He's green. The kid's green. And it's hard not to like him. Man, he's got the... Whew.
Fernando Mendoza seems like the lead character in a sports movie about like a 12-year-old who like becomes like a star. Like Mike, kind of. Remember the movie
Like
Mike?
He should be on the Disney movie. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Fernando Mendoza.
Or Hallmark. Either one. You could put him on either one.
He's got that Hallmark look
does.
To me. Yeah,
he has that Hallmark look, yes.
He could be the love interest in the Hallmark movie. Maybe he will be one day. You know how the NFL and Hallmark, every Christmas, they have some sort of football-themed movie. Maybe it could be Fernando Mendoza.
Jay, just don't forget Hallmark. If you come, when you come to Nashville, I want to be in it. I ain't got to be the lead guy. I just want to part. That's all.
I hear you, man. So Fernando Mendoza might be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Let's talk about the most recent number one pick in the NFL draft. That, of course, being Cam Ward. We're talking about whether Cam Ward's inaccuracy can be fixed. He has a 59.1 completion percentage this season, which ranks 32nd out of 34 qualified quarterbacks ahead of only Chicago's Caleb Williams and Minnesota's J.J. McCarthy. Pro Football Focus has a stat called adjusted completion percentage, which, quote, takes into account factors outside of the quarterback's control in terms of completing passes. It accounts for dropped passes, passes thrown away, spiked balls, passes batted at the line of scrimmage, and those passes in which a quarterback was hit as he threw. Cam Ward has an adjusted completion percentage of 69.9%. Again, his actual completion percentage, 59.1. His adjusted, according to Pro Football Focus, 69.9%. That sounds good. Except for the fact that 69.9% adjusted percentage ranks 32nd out of 34 quarterbacks ahead of Caleb Williams and Dylan Gabriel. So although he probably deserves a little bit better on his actual completion percentage, it's still near the bottom of the league, even when you factor in the fancy stuff and you take away the dropped passes and the throwaways and the spikes and all of those things. So the question that we are discussing is, can his inaccuracy be fixed? By the way, Jackson on our text line says, Fernando Mendoza is the Napoleon Dynamite of college football. That is an excellent, Jackson, that is an excellent, excellent
He's
reference.
He's absolutely right. He Goodness.
I can imagine Fernando Mendoza wearing the moon boots with his jeans tucked into them.
With tarts in his pocket.
Yes, with the tater tot stuffed in his zip-up pockets on his cargo pants.
Tots.
Idiot! Such a good movie.
Napoleon. Got some tots. I love that movie.
Oh, man. That movie's all more right. than 20 years old.
It is. It's old.
But
I love
Jackson,
it.
That is a fantastic reference. Thank you for that. Jackson has a question as well about Cam Ward. He said, I asked this last week, but Derek, can you comment on how catchable of a ball Cam throws? Seems like his arm angle makes it difficult for him to throw with great touch, which affects accuracy. We have mentioned in the past the arm angle, the sidearm stuff. We've also discussed the velocity of his passes. Now, we don't have a number on how fast he throws compared to other quarterbacks, but throughout the season, we have hypothesized that some of the reason why the wide receivers are dropping the ball is because Cam throws a hard ball. But why don't you answer Jackson's question? How catchable of a ball do you think Cam throws?
I think he throws a catchable ball. You know, he tries to fit him in tight spaces, especially down the middle of the field. But I do believe whether his arm angle is over the top to the side or whatnot, I do believe he throws a catchable ball. I think what happens is he has a bunch of new pass catchers, and they're all trying to figure one another out. And there may be some miscues. And that's why I say he needs to get better at knowing his wide receivers. Because that's one thing that, you know, I was accustomed to with Steve. I knew where Steve wanted to go with the ball. He knew me as a receiver. He knew my body language and everything else. So when you know that about your receiver, you tend to become a little bit more accurate throwing to that guy or guys. So he has to learn his receivers better. And he does need to, you know, a lot of it has to do with his, you know, base and everything else. And I think he will learn that as he continues to go. I don't think he's nowhere near a finished product, but I don't think that he doesn't have what it takes, or I haven't seen a guy that can be a, you know, accurate passer in this league, that can be a plus 60% completion guy. Now that, you know, has to do too with the people around you, the completions, the people around you catching the football or not. But he does need to get better because you gave me some numbers. Again, Adam loves the numbers. I love them, but I like watching too more than anything. But
that's how we blend.
Yeah, that's how we blend. Exactly.
That's how we blend it. You have the eye test. I have the numbers. That's what we're trying to give you.
And you gave me the numbers on him throwing the ball deep down the field to the right and to the left.
So let me give people those numbers right now, at least according to Pro Football Focus. Cam Ward throwing the ball deep to the left, 5 of 14 on the season. Deep to the center, 5 of 10 for the season. Deep to the right, 3 for 16. This season,
he needs to get better across the board. But it seems like I mentioned earlier, it seems like that right side, whether it be a deep route or corner route, he's had trouble connecting, whether it be a drop ball or just hitting guys.
But tell me why it would matter. This might be a really stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. why does the direction matter? Why would he struggle on deep right passes, for example, but not on deep left passes?
I mean, one, you're throwing across your body. The other, you're not. Mm-hmm. You're stepping in and you're pointing. That's what you're supposed to do, pointing toward your throw, and you're stepping into it. When you're throwing to the left, being a right-hand quarterback, you're throwing across your body, and sometimes you don't get your base and your hips set to throw across your body, especially deep. That's why that left tackle position is so critical, because you got to be able to torque your body around and get the ball over there. But I'm not sure why he is having trouble to his right, throwing to his right, because that's the side he can see. That's the side he should have the most accuracy with. But for some reason, down the field, he doesn't have it. And he has to get better. Again, he has to get better across the board throwing the ball down the field, because if he doesn't, it's going to make it harder for him to complete those short intermediate passes, because people are like, listen, he's not going to throw it. And if he does, he's a 50-50 guy at best.
So ESPN had this nugget in its NFL preview for the week. Titans quarterback Cam Ward has a 62% completion rate since week 11, which ranks 13th among 34 qualified quarterbacks during that span. He previously ranked last among qualified quarterbacks in completion rate from weeks 1 through 10 at 58%. So here's what I did. I wanted to look at the type of passes he's been throwing since the bye, mm-hmm. and before. He has attempted 145 passes since week 11. 105 of those 145 passes are short passes, meaning under 10 air yards. Mm-hmm. 31 intermediate, 9 deep. So 72.4% of his pass attempts since week 11 have been short pass attempts. Before week 11, 295 pass attempts, 67.1% of them were short passes. So his short pass percentage before and after the bye has gone up from 67.1 to 72.4. That is noticeable. And it apparently coincides with an increase in his completion rate.
Yeah, you saw it right after the bye when McCoy took over. You saw him starting to hit those running backs, Pollard out the backfield, start taking those short shots to Gunnar Helm, or Chig, or taking those slants to Elik or DK, or those crossing routes. You started to see more of that. Why? You got to get your quarterback in rhythm. You can't just drop back or get the ball in shotgun and automatically want to heave the ball down the field. That's what they were doing the first half of the season. And you had some plays that were, wow, that's a good thing. But more times than not, it was overthrown balls or drop balls. You can't say, all right, And it's almost like they took that approach. We're going to work from top to bottom. That's the approach I think Callahan and the coaching staff took at the time. We're going to work top to bottom. We're going to go from our deep route, intermediate routes to our short routes. When in fact, you should have been going from short, intermediate to deep. Allow your quarterback to get a rhythm. I go back to Bo Nix. You would be surprised how many he has, especially that first year, a lot of his passes were short passes. Why? Because you and listen. If it's open, throw it. We can play the chip away game. We don't need to play the chunk game, because if we play enough with the chip away game, eventually you got to come up, and then I can hit you deep. And maybe I don't have to be as accurate, because the windows are a lot bigger when I'm doing that. But the Titans, for some reason, they went deep and tried to work themselves down, and it never worked. There was a point where Cam was almost leading the league in average air yards per throw. That's malpractice for a young quarterback. That's what that is, essentially. That is malpractice for a young quarterback. You're telling your young quarterback, you know what? And now that I'm looking at it, they did the same thing with Will Levis. The same exact thing with Will Levis. Now, I don't know how accurate of a passer Will Levis is in general, but they sure enough didn't help him.
To your point, in week one against Denver, Cam Ward averaged 10.8 air yards per attempt. If I'm not mistaken, that was the highest in week one. Mm-hmm. I recall discussing that on the show. But I'm looking at recent weeks against the Browns Air yards per attempt, 5.1. Against the Jaguars the week before, 6.2. Against the Seahawks, 5.0. Against the Texans, 7.1. All since the bye.
And that's where Cam needs to be the most effective. 7 yards. Now, you may have a game where you got to push the ball down the field.
To your point against the Cardinals, remember the comeback at the end of the game, he was at 10.9 air yards per attempt, which is his season high. But outside of that game and the Broncos game, he's been in single digits. But two of his lowest performances in that category have come in two of the past 3 weeks against the Seahawks and the Browns.
He has to, with Cam and I think the offense, because people look at his, you know, him in college and, you know, he threw the ball down the field and he had a lot of success. But in college, the windows tend to be a lot bigger. So you're going to complete a lot of those deep passes. Even a freshman quarterback can do those, you know, throw those balls, because especially if you got talent around you, because the holes are going to be so big. And then once you get in the NFL, I'm not sure why Callahan didn't, you know, recognize, like, I can't have this young man starting from the top and working his way down. I got to have him starting from the bottom and work his way up. Run game. I talked a lot about the best friend outside of an offensive line for a rookie quarterback is a good running game. And they never established it the way, and they haven't established it really outside of last game, really established it as being a strength for them this whole season. But that's how you start it with a rookie quarterback, especially the first overall pick. You want to make sure that you take – You deal with him with kid gloves or delicate gloves, in a sense. You deal with him in a delicate way. You bring the process has to be slow. You can't rush the process with some of these quarterbacks. So you take them from step one and then work your way up. Do what Denver did with Bo Nix. Work him from the ground and go up. For some reason, Brian Callahan and the staff at that time thought that, okay, let's start at the top. And then try to work our way down, and it just didn't work.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on Cam Ward. The Titans are back in action on Sunday afternoon at the San Francisco 49ers. Can Cam Ward's inaccuracy be fixed? How confident are you that he and the Titans can fix that inaccuracy? 615-737-1025. It's bowl season, and the Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Tomorrow, catch the Celebration Bowl on 1025 The Game as SC State takes on Prairie View at 11 a.m. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowlgames. The college football game of the week is Boise State versus Washington in the LA Bowl tomorrow night on 94.9 The Fan at 7 o'clock. Coverage is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and is also available on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, talking Cam Ward, who was back in action with the Titans on Sunday at San Francisco. I believe a 3:25 central kickoff, so a little bit later than usual, which isn't a terrible thing. You can get more done during the day before you have to watch the Titans, and, you know, sometimes that is a chore to watch the Tennessee Titans, but they did win the game last week, so that's a good thing. So, Derek, I stumbled across this article written by Dan Orlovsky, friend of the show. He wrote this before the season. He ranked NFL quarterbacks by traits: arm strength, mechanics, decision-making, pocket presence, etc. He had a category called ball placement. Mm-hmm. And I want to read what Orlovsky wrote, and I want you to tell me how you feel Cam does in this department. Quote, accuracy and ball placement aren't the same thing. And when I'm talking about the most important traits in a QB, ball location carries more weight. Can you precisely place the ball no matter the situation? Do you routinely get the completion even when you shouldn't? Does the ball go to a spot that allows for extra yardage after the catch? Accurate quarterbacks put the football where the receiver can make a play, but those with high-end ball placement make sure the receiver is the only one who can make a play. Do you agree with Orlovsky's assessment generally?
I mean, I would tend to think, you know, ball placement does accuracy does have to do with ball placement. Am I crazy to say that, that they're not separate, they're together or equal?
Well, like, he threw the ball in the league, and you caught the ball in the league.
I mean, ball placement, it's hard to sort of – and listen, I'm not saying that that he's wrong. But in my mind, it's hard to sort of separate ball placement and accuracy. Because if you got good ball placement, that means you have good accuracy. I think Cam needs to get better at both. I think that at times his ball placement, which means his accuracy is there. But then at times, especially early on, balls behind guys, you know, balls over, you know, over the guy's head, especially down the middle of the field. So those things have to do with ball placement and accuracy in a sense. But again, he's played, Dan has played the position for a very long time. And no matter how good or bad you say he was a backup NFL quarterback. So that meant a lot. But to me, I can't sort of, you know, sift through it and say, well, I'm taking, you know, I'm going to make accuracy and ball placement separate. I think they're both the same in a sense to me. But I do understand, you know, and again, I do think Cam has good ball placement at times. He needs to get better. That goes along with his accuracy. I think it helps when you start to throw these short and intermediate passes, these slants, these crosses, these quick outs, those bang eights, those quick ends. That helps helps you with your ball placement because you get into a rhythm and you know where you need to throw the ball, and that goes along with your accuracy as well. So I'm not saying that Dan's wrong, but I kind of see them both as being the same thing, or one being, you can't have one without the other.
By the way, Orlovsky's top 10 quarterbacks before the season in ball placement. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford, Tua Tagovailoa, Brock Purdy, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith.
I think Matthew Stafford is the best of them all, man. And I don't know if he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. If he wins another Super Bowl, doggone it, he just may be. But, yeah, I think when you start naming those quarterbacks, not to say that he's wrong in naming those guys, but I would put Matt Stafford. Was he ranking them in that order?
He ranked them 1 through 10 in that order.
Okay. I would have Matthew Stafford a little bit higher than that. But Brock Purdy, he's shown that he's highly accurate in that system that they run, and Lamar has shown he's gotten a lot better. But that's where one, in my mind, one can't survive without the other. I think you got to have good ball placement in order to have accuracy, or you got to have accuracy in order to have good ball placement.
One texter says, which do you think is more true? The quarterback throws to the receiver, or the receiver adjusts to where the quarterback throws it?
We were always, as receivers, we were taught to, you adjust to the guy, especially on deep routes. You give the quarterback enough room, like margin for error. You got to give him. That's why when we run nine routes, you tell you to stack the defensive back, give yourself at least 2 yards from the sideline, and it may be a little bit more than that from out of bounds, because that is a tight, unless you're wide open, that has to be a tight throw and an accurate throw. So leave me a little lee room if I want to throw it a little bit to the outside. So we were always taught, adjust to the quarterback. You know, the quarterback could throw it where he needs to throw it. You can't predetermine where he needs to throw the football. You just get open, run to the space, and if you have a good quarterback, he's going to make sure you don't get your block knocked off.
Steven from Hendersonville says, D-Mace, do you think Ward's inaccuracy to the right could be the result of poor footwork, which keeps his hips open and the ball being off target?
It could be. And these are the things. That's why and I know it's hard in real time to let the process kind of work itself out. I know it's hard in real time. It's hard for us because we got to talk about it every week, about what they're doing, what they're not doing. But you got to understand that at the beginning of the season, Cam, he was working out for the combine, just like all these other rookies, They were all working out for the combine. They were doing drills and this and that. They weren't doing things that were going to make them ultimately better in the league. They're just trying to do what they can to make sure they secure a draft position, a hopeful draft position in the NFL draft. So there are a lot of things that these young men do. And then when they get in the league, it's like, it's almost like a shock because now they got to get back to playing football and they got to rewire their mind, their brain, and rewire their body because now it's not about, you know, preparing for drills. You got to play a game now, and you haven't prepared for a game in a very long time, any months-wise. That's why that first year for all these rookies, a lot of them, it's hard. I want to see the second year because the second year will tell me a lot. The second year will tell me how much you reflected on the season prior and how hard did you critique yourself as a player. Because if you don't come back the next season more polished, more developed, and the process is moving along, then you're not doing the job that they have called you to do. That's why for me, I'm looking at Cam, I'm looking at DK, I'm looking at Elliott. Even with Levis last year, it was the same thing. Let me see him. How does he come back in the offseason? After the offseason, now that he knows what he needs to work on, he knows what this league is about. He knows how tight these windows are going to be. He knows his wide receivers. Let me see how he comes back the next following season. So I know it's hard, people, to wait on that. Hell, it's hard for me. But I do understand that that first year and that second year is going to be where you see the biggest improvement or lack thereof.
Scott says, isn't placement recognition of where the ball needs to go and accuracy the skill to put it there?
Again, I'm not saying that Dan was wrong, but I said in my mind, how I process it, I'm not saying that you're wrong, people, but in my mind, how I process it is in order to have good ball placement, there has to be some accuracy. If I have to throw that ball 30 yards down, why do quarterbacks have this drill that they do? And I know everybody's seen them, the trash can drill. They put it at the end, at the corner of the end zone. I'm trying to get my ball placement, but I'm also in getting ball placement. I'm getting accurate at throwing that pass. So again, the definition of what that probably is the definition of both of them. But in my eyes, the way I see it, I can't separate one from the other, just in my mind.
Ted Wynn, who writes for The Athletic, does film study on the NFL, wrote a story looking at Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and Tyler Shuck from last week. And here is what Ted Wynn, in part, wrote about Ward. Quote, I've written about Ward before, but the numbers don't tell the whole story of the top pick who is playing in as bad an environment for a young quarterback as there could be. He's on his second play caller this season, throwing to receivers who would not start for most NFL teams, behind an awful offensive line. If you look past the numbers and see the film, there's so much to like about Ward's play from the pocket. Of course, he has room to improve, but he's seeing and doing so many advanced things. Then Wynn has some video clips, which we, of course, can't share with you because this is not a visual medium. Ted Wynn continues, Ward's tape is littered with these types of plays in which his teammates have let him down. His production has been disappointing, but there's plenty to like about how Ward is developing. The Titans have to find the right coach and upgrade the talent around him, but there are a lot of holes to fill, such as the life of a quarterback pick number one overall.
There's going to be some things that you see that are going to be good, but then there's going to be things that you see that needs improvement, that are bad. But that don't mean that he's not taking steps toward improving himself each and every game, each and every time he steps out on a practice field. Because to me, again, development isn't, oh, you know, look at the great game he played. He did this and he did. Development is, to me, is are you improving on those little small things? Because ultimately, those little small things are going to allow you to become a better quarterback in the big things. You got to make sure you're doing it. And sometimes people don't see the little small things. It's just like, you know, I tell my kids all the time, like when they were little, listen, y'all are only seeing the end part of that person and his big house or his fancy car or his closet or their closet or, you know, their houses. You didn't see all the work that they had to put in, the small steps that people didn't. You just see this young man or this young woman, you know, have a Fortune 500 business at an age of 40. You just see that. But you don't see all the hard work and the incremental progressions that they made. Football is the same way. Being a quarterback is the same way. Everybody praises and louds over, you know, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and all these quarterbacks, but y'all ain't see the little things that they had to do each and every week, each and every game to become that person that they ultimately were, which is one is considered the GOAT and the other is considered, you know, damn near close to the GOAT. Well, he got a few GOATs, you know, in his backyard, but Tom just got more. So you don't see all those little things. You just see the, you know, the championships and in the games. But there, Tom wasn't Tom when he took over. Peyton wasn't Peyton when he took over. Lamar wasn't Lamar. Josh wasn't Josh. Caleb wasn't Caleb. He's better this year. I can go down a list of quarterbacks that wasn't that guy when they took over that first year. And maybe not even Sam Darnold. It took him 3 or 4 years. Baker Mayfield, it took him a minute. So I just want people to listen. We can have this debate and we can talk about Cam and what he needs. And I'm not saying that you're wrong. If you see something that he needs to improve on, then great. But what I'm saying is there's still a lot of the movie that needs to be written, you know? And to say all of a sudden, because we've only seen, hell, they just walked into the audience. I mean, they just walked on screen. The first scene just happened. Matter of fact, Pixar is still doing the animation stuff. And y'all saying the movie's bad? Well, we ain't even gotten to the movie yet. We're still working it. We're still working through it. So, again, to me, he needs to improve. Yes, each and every game, he needs to show something. My thing is I want to see what he does in the offseason and how he comes back.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on Cam Ward. Coming up next, there is a question I've been meaning to ask all week about Jeffrey Simmons, and we haven't gotten to it, and I'm going to get to it next, I promise. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com. We do have some more Cam Ward reaction, but I've been meaning to ask this question for the past few days. So Jeffrey Simmons, as we know, he's had a hell of a year. Yes. I think he's going to be an all-pro. He's certainly trending in that direction. Listen to this stat or stats from the NFL on Jeffrey Simmons. Jeffrey Simmons generated 11 pressures in week 14 against the Browns, tied for the most of any player in any game this season. He is one of only two defensive tackles, DeForest Buckner being the other, to generate more than 8 pressures in a game this season. He leads all defensive tackles with 8 sacks and has the second most pressures at the position this season. His 13.9% pressure rate is the second highest mark among defensive tackles with 200-plus pass rushers. He's having a fabulous season, no doubt about it. And I will admit, Derek, as I was watching Jeffrey Simmons play on Sunday, he was more noticeable than Myles Garrett. The Titans did a good job against Myles Garrett on Sunday. We all thought a week ago as we were sitting here that Myles Garrett was going to have roughly 17 sacks against the Titans. But here was the question I was wondering. Well, actually, it was less of a question and more of like a man. I wonder what the Titans could have gotten if they would have traded Jeffrey Simmons, because he's balling out there.
Yes,
and I was just like, man, him playing this way, the Titans could have gotten something real nice for him. So I was just wondering if Jeffrey Simmons' dominance recently has changed your stance on the Titans' decision not to trade him.
Nope, it hasn't. I think they did the right thing. Outside of Myles Garrett and the phenomenal season he's having, I think Jeffrey Simmons is playing his way into Defensive Player of the Year award. Now, listen, if Myles Garrett gets the sack record or even ties it, I think he wins it. He's just been that dominant of a player. But make no mistake, Jeff ain't taking a backseat to nobody, especially this season. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he won defensive player. Yeah, I think he's going to – if he stays healthy, I think he's going to be an all-pro, first-team all-pro. And, if Myles Garrett wasn't having a season he's having – and there may be some other guys out there that are having a good season defensive-wise. But if Myles Garrett wasn't having the season he was having, I think at this point, Jeffrey Simmons would be the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. That's how well he's playing. So, no, I do not go back on what I said in regards to trading Jeffrey Simmons.
You were on team keep Simmons.
Keep him.
Willie and I were on team trade him. And look, Jeffrey Simmons – caught a lot of flack for the way he's been performing in recent years, some of the things he's done, quote-unquote, off the field, bickering with Buck Rising and getting to dust-ups, skirmishes, kerfuffles with Cam Ward, questioning his leadership, not showing up to OTAs, all of those things. Jeffrey Simmons has taken a lot of heat. And to his credit, he's killed it this season. You can tell that the weight he dropped in the offseason, it's helped. He looks like a new man out there. But again, as I was watching him play on Sunday and I kept hearing the announcer say, Jeffrey Simmons, Jeffrey Simmons, Jeffrey Simmons, I thought, man, I wonder what the Titans could have gotten for Jeffrey Simmons in the trade, because that would have been pretty cool. But as we discussed at the time, Jeffrey Simmons, Mike Borgonzi said he was off limits. He wants Jeffrey Simmons here to help rebuild the culture. And again, kudos to Jeffrey Simmons. There haven't been a lot of bright spots for the Tennessee Titans this season. He has definitely been one of them. But again, I did wonder just a little bit. Back to Cam Ward. Wes in Hermitage says, didn't we rip Will Levis for saying he needs to rewire his brain? Now we're saying it about Ward after one season. I'm worried. And here's something, Derek, that I think we should discuss as you sigh, because I know that this is something that irks you a little bit.
Yeah.
Part of me wonders if we're holding Cam Ward in – is there a double standard? Uh-huh. Is there a double standard here? Because Will Levis had some of the same issues that Cam Ward has had. Now, Cam Ward hasn't done – the Will Levis surrender Cobra type turnovers and all of the stuff that we were seeing at the beginning of last season. Cam Ward hasn't done that. He has turned the ball over. But do you think there's any truth to the idea that there's a double standard with how we are evaluating Cam Ward versus how we evaluated Will Levis?
Of course, there's a double standard. I think people are expecting Cam Ward, because he was the number one pick, and rightfully so, to be much better than what he has been. I don't think people – if Will Levis – well, he was playing like sort of kind of like this, but there wasn't an expectation because he was the number one pick in the draft. The expectation was, hey, he was a second round pick. You know, you moved up to get him, come out and if he does a good job, great. People wanted him to develop, and ultimately, I'm sure the Titans wanted him to be the franchise quarterback. But the expectation of a second round pick and the first pick in the overall NFL draft is totally different. It's like night and day. You expect this guy to come in, regardless of what history has told you. You expect this guy to come in and be that guy right away. And we know whether it's the quarterback, running back, whoever they draft number one, a lot of times he's going to struggle. More notably, the quarterbacks, they're going to struggle. So, there's going to be a double standard when it comes to Cam. I don't think anyone's cutting Cam any slack. I tell you that, based upon what we're hearing, he's not making any progress at all. So I'm not sure if the caller is saying, or if you're asking, are they being a little lenient on Cam, or are they being too hard on Cam and they were lenient on Will, or are they which one?
I'm putting words in Wes's mouth.
Yes.
But I think Wes's question leads me to my question, which is, I think, well, it's less of a question, more of a statement, which leads into a question, I guess. The idea of the theory of the double standard.
Yes.
That Cam Ward is struggling in ways that Will Levis struggled.
Yes.
Last season. And last season, a lot of us were prepared to ride Will Levis out of town. And we're preaching more patience with Cam Ward. I think the simple answer to your point, Derek, is, well, Cam Ward was the number one overall pick in the draft. Will Levis was not. And rightly or wrongly, number one picks in the draft get a lot more leeway. It doesn't just happen in football. Mm-hmm. It happens across all sports. If you are the number one pick in your draft, your organization is going to try and try and try until it literally cannot try anymore. So, is there a double standard? Honestly, yeah, probably.
It should be. And again, we didn't nitpick Will Levis his first year. You got to understand, that was his second year when all the nitpicking came. Because what? As I said before, he went into the offseason knowing what he needed to get better at. And I wanted to see, once he came back, how was he going to be as a quarterback?
And then he did this stuff against the Bears.
Exactly. So that's what, like, yeah, but it took a year. He had already played 9 games previously in the NFL. And I heard the countdown. He's only played 20 games. He's only played 15 games. He's only played 14. I've heard it all. I heard it all. And it wasn't until that second season, it was like, okay, he's not showing any improvement. So people, after he had been in the league already a year, and get it, I know he had only played 9 games, but he had been in the league. He understood the NFL. He knew what he needed to get better at the next previous season. And he didn't get any better. That's all I'm saying. So with Cam, it's, let's wait until the second season to really start saying whether this guy is the franchise guy or an elite quarterback or a bust or not. I think people are looking at it now and saying, no, he's just a bust. We don't know that yet. And for the text, I didn't say that Cam, like, I made reference to rewiring his mind because of what? I said the draft. I said when these men, these young men, they are preparing themselves for the draft. And which means, because I've been through it, you're not working on, you know, schemes and all this other stuff that you need to prepare for in the NFL, conditioning and all that other stuff. You're working for specific drills to make sure you maximize those drills so you can position yourself the best way possible in the NFL draft. So your thought process is different. And then you get in a season after just finishing a college season. You get into an NFL season. Now it's like, man, I do got to rewire some things because this league forces you to do that. This league tells you right away that those things you did in college, you ain't going to be able to do them here, or at least not right now. So that's what I meant by rewiring. It wasn't what you insinuated it to be.
You were using it in a different context.
Exactly.
Than the way that
the texter
that Levis used it last season, because I believe he used those words himself.
Yes, he used them himself.
Right. But to clarify, you were using that same term, but in a different context.
Exactly.
Dustin in Hopkinsville says, there is definitely a double standard on Levis versus Ward. I love Levis, but people say this line is bad. No weapons, bad team. Levis got none of that except from Levis fans. Cam's catching less flack for a lot of the same stuff. He had the same bum coach, worse line, one less tight end that's effective. The only thing I feel he had that was better was DeAndre Hopkins.
Again, he was going into his second year. That's what I'm looking at, people. I'm not looking at, he didn't have any, I didn't say that he had a bunch of talent around him. He didn't. Well, at first he did, because he had Hop and Ridley. And then he ended up trading Hop away. But he had Hop and Ridley and Pollard and Chig. You know, he had some guys. I'm not going to say they were A-list players, but Hop is a future Hall of Famer. Ridley had just started coming on. So when you look at it from that standpoint, I would tend to say, yes, he did have more, a little bit more than what Cam has at this point. He wasn't throwing the rookie guys. Cam's throwing the rookie guys.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. But coming up next, a big moment coming up. And no, not Willie Donick joining the program, though that is a big moment. But tomorrow is the Heisman Trophy presentation. What would Diego Pavia winning the Heisman Trophy mean for Vanderbilt? We will discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason. Well, Willie Donick's not here yet, but he will be. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, The Game.